G'day everyone. This is Tom Uran of Seriously Risky Business, and I'm here with the Gruck.
Hi everyone.
First of all, let me thank the Cyber Initiative at the Hewlett Foundation and also founding corporate sponsors Proofpoint for their support. Today we thought we would approach grand strategy for cyber. What different countries do, you know, in cyber operations, how they conduct themselves, what they actually hope to achieve. And we've decided that we're going to conclude that the US has got it all wrong. They're actually doing things backwards. First of all, let's do a quick whip through of different countries and see how their cyber strategies actually make sense.
Sounds like a plan.
Who do you want to kick us off with, Gruck?
So let's start with the easy one. Let's do North Korea.
Yep.
North Korea has decided that cyber is a way to compensate maybe a little bit for lack of power projection outside of the peninsula. But mostly what they do is they make up for the fact that they are heavily sanctioned. So it's a way of getting money. Right? That appears to be their primary use, you know, other than screwing around with South Korea. So yeah, like they have a strategy which is, let's compensate for our inability to make money normally and use cyber to make up for that, which makes a huge amount of sense, right?
Yep. And it fits into being constrained in other ways. So to me, that's a good national strategy. Like it makes sense, right, for the whole country.
Absolutely. And I think, just to be absolutely clear, while it's a good strategy, we don't think that it is we're not saying this is morally correct, right? We're not endorsing
that's right.
it.
No. It just makes sense in the circumstances that they find themselves in. They put themselves in.
They put themselves in, yeah.
Yep. Okay. So who's next?
China then.
Yep. China, they have national goals and they've used cyber operations to achieve those. So most famously, I suppose, is intellectual property theft. They decided that they wanted to move up the advanced manufacturing ladder. One part of that is to use cyber espionage to steal intellectual property. So that, I think, is a good example of a national strategy, because cyber operations are just one arm. They also use the attraction of their market to convince companies to manufacture in China and transfer knowledge. So it's an integrated strategy where cyber's not just sitting alone. They also, by all accounts, are investing in military capabilities, ones, you know, to destroy things, disrupt. It's hard to know how that's going because they don't ever demonstrate or talk about them, or at least not to my knowledge. But that kind of makes sense. I think in some of the other countries also talk about it's seen as an augmentation to their conventional capabilities.
Since we're on like the big axis of evil go around, let's do Russia next. So for Russia, while they do a lot of espionage, I think an important part for them is the soft power capabilities that they've had, the sort of their ability to project into what they consider the information sphere or the information domain, how they've been able to control narratives and get, you know, sort of Russia positive versions of events, or at least, you know, confusion, such as stuff that they did around Crimea when they were taking it over. The MH17 stuff, that for them has been very useful, and it's part of a national strategy where they've looked at, we need to be able to project a particular image, we need soft power, and they pursued cyber stuff as that soft power capability.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I would call it soft power.
They do, that's the thing.
They call it soft power.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I would agree that, you know, soft power is, it's not, if I hack you and buy off people in your country to tell you things that I want you to hear, it's not necessarily soft power in the way that we would traditionally think of it. But that is, that's their perception.
I think that was a Joseph Nye thing, and he defined it as kind of an attractive power. But regardless, I agree that whether you call it soft or sharp is a term that I've heard is a bit different.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I've heard sharp used in relationship to the way China does things, which is more coercive. And so I think that technically is different from what you're talking about, but it's
same sort of thing.
You're
not threatening with nukes or invasion. You're doing something else to make people do what you want.
Yep. So Iran.
Yeah. So Iran, I think, again, it's, I think they have some of the North Korea aspect, where they've gotten themselves in a situation where they are severely limited in what they can do. And so cyber is a way for them to step beyond those bounds and actually do a bunch of things. Like, they can do a lot of espionage, they can do destructive attacks, they can have some power projection against, you know, even the US. They can reach out.
Yep.
You know, not effectively, but that's a thing they can do. So again, for them, you know, it really makes sense in that it patches gaps that they have, and it allows them to appear stronger as a player on the international game than they would be if it was just convention.
Yeah, yeah. Have more impact doing things that they couldn't do without that capability. I agree. That kind of makes sense. And now Australia, UK, a lot of Western countries, we thought that the cyber capabilities are kind of, well, they do two things, I suppose. They are used to gather intelligence, and also more recently as kind of an add-on to conventional capabilities. Mm-hmm. So for Australia, which I call, of course, know best, it makes sense if you've got a military of our size to look for things that you can use to augment it that you think might give it an advantage. So I'd probably say that there's good reasons to think that cyber capabilities might give you an advantage in particular circumstances, but the jury's still out because it's rarely demonstrated or hasn't been demonstrated really well to date in a proper big war. But that kind of makes sense for Australia. We'll spend some money on the conventional military and the cyber forces, and hopefully together we'll get something that's greater than the sum of the parts.
Right. And so I wanted to bring up the Netherlands as a special example as well of how, you know, as a very small nation, but having very good cyber, particularly for their law enforcement, it allows them to be sort of a senior partner in a lot of operations against dark web or taking down drug cartels, things like that. It allows them to be larger as a partner than they would be if it was just down to, you know, the manpower that they could put on a specific task. So it's a thing that allows them to sort of augment and have more impact. So, you know, again, for them, it's certainly useful. It makes sense as a national strategy to ensure that they're taken seriously, they have a place at the table, etc.
Yeah.
Now, how about the US?
Well, we were talking about this, having this discussion, and the problem I thought, as it was sort of rattling around in my head, is that it's just for all the countries that we've mentioned, it just makes sense, right? It's not a very interesting discussion to say, yeah, that kind of makes sense. People are doing it right. But then it occurred to me that for the US, it actually doesn't make sense in that their conventional military is so overpowering that allowing other countries to have capabilities in cyberspace, it kind of levels the playing field. And in fact, their national strategy, the best one would be to just crush the ability to conduct these kinds of operations in cyberspace.
Yeah.
And to actually drive the whole information security ecosystem to be really, really safe.
Yeah. You hear that, Washington? Put us out of a job.
That's right. Yeah. 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 And so, like, I wonder, do you agree with me? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think... you know, we chatted about this a little bit last week after the show, and it was a really intriguing idea. And after, you know, after a week, it still stuck with me. And I think that, you know, you're absolutely onto something. I just sort of like what the US did was early on, they were the only ones that sort of had good cyber capabilities, and they thought that this would last forever. Just like they thought that, you know, the end of history, I guess, with the, you know, the 90s and stuff, like, that's it, we won, it's over. And that was a mistake. And I think a good example of this is actually the Dreadnought effect. So 100 years ago, sort of around the turn of the century, the British Navy was the largest in the world. They had like 120 ships or something like that. And everyone else, like the French, the Germans, and so on, they had like 10 or 20. And all of these were called pre-dreadnoughts. So like these were battleships that were insane, you know, that have big guns for faraway things, medium guns for slightly close by things, and then small guns for anyone who came up close to you. And they look insane, and they're terrible and all this stuff. And so the one thing going for them, though, was that the British had 120 of them and no one else had anything close. And so, you know, in a year, the British would have like another four, and it didn't matter if, you know, France had another four or Germany had another four, because they couldn't possibly match the dominance that the British had. So then they built the dreadnought, where someone said, you know, how about instead of like all of these dumbass things, we just make a really fast ship with really big guns that shoot very far away, and then we can run away from anyone who tries to get close and shoot everyone before they can reach us. Yep. And this was the dreadnought, and it was brilliant. It outclassed everything. It suddenly changed the entire game. And the British, they had achieved this super dominance. They now had 120 outdated, useless, obsolete ships, and the single best, most dominant battleship on the seas. But the problem, of course, is that they now had the best navy in the world by one ship. and so it was now possible to compete with them, because anyone can outbuild for one ship. So anyway, that's the dreadnought effect, is when you innovate so well, you reset the playing field, and you still have an advantage, but now people can catch up.
Yep.
Right.
And so I guess the contention is, in this case, other countries have caught up.
Right. And this is, of course, because, you know, unlike, for example, with a dreadnought where you need a shipyard and, you know, a lot of money and stuff like that, cyber does not need an industrial base.
Mm. Right. Yep.
Cyber is sort of, it's about people and, I mean, that's about it, right? If you've got the people, you can have the cyber.
Well, I guess North Korea, the story is that they decided that they wanted a cyber capability. They have talent identification programs. They find good, talented youngsters. They funnel them into a large program that does the things or achieves the things that they want it to achieve. And so it's just by grabbing the people, funneling them where you want, getting them to work together. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes time, but it's maybe 10 years instead of, I mean, how long would it take to build up an industrial base to sort of match the US conventional military?
Yeah, and I think this is one of the things, is that the US has this industrial base, which for conventional and even nuclear is absolutely critical, and it cannot be matched, right? Maybe now it could be matched by China. The thing is that is not relevant in terms of cyber. And I think North Korea is a great example of that, because you can actually see the improvement in their quality over time. Like, there used to be a joke with how, you know, they'd send these absolutely horrible phishing emails with, please log into our web server and download the correct piece of malware for your device. Now, you know, they're burning O-Day. They've gone from having rudimentary skills to being quite competent in what they can produce and deploy, which I think demonstrates that even in the most adverse conditions, if you've got the people and the will, you can build up a very good cyber capability. So I think if North Korea can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah. And I mentioned North Korea because that's the example I've read the most about from the least, I guess, the country you would be most surprised for that to happen. Mm-hmm. It's a surprise that there's not more countries that have done the same thing. And I guess it's just that they've got different options.
I think we might have hit it there with the North Korea has to do this. This was a sort of national requirement at the strategic level, because they didn't have another way of getting, you know, revenue and funds. So what this means is basically, if Sudan decided that they needed cyber and they made it a priority, they would be a powerhouse in some number of years, simply because they decided to do it.
So in a way, the rise of cyber operations as a field of strategic competition, maybe, has been a great leveler for many countries. And in your analogy, the US still has those 120 ships, but a different playing field. It's very much a competition. And so I guess at this point in the analogy, my argument is that the US should drain the ocean. That doesn't quite work, but
you can't drink it. You have to boil it. Boil the ocean. Right.
Well, I guess that's the question, yeah. Right? Could the US even do something to get rid of the cyber as a playing field? And then that would leave it with just its conventional military compared mm-hmm. to everyone else's conventional military. It's the sort of relative advantage would be a lot higher.
Right.
Is that even possible? Or is the internet and everything connected to it too complex to be fixed at this point?
So I'm going to take two stabs at that. First of all, I'm going to say it's not possible, but for reasons that we haven't addressed yet, which is that, yep. as I was saying, the Russians have the idea not of cyber, but of the information domain. And I think that captures more of what the internet does than just cyber. And so let's say you wave your magic wand, O-days vanish, no one writes bugs anymore.
Active Directory is secure.
Come on, we're saying that there's a magic wand, not, you know. It's not that magic. Let's be realistic. But, you know, like we move to, I don't know, zero trust. You know, Microsoft gets its wish. We're all zero trust and everything yep. works and there's no bugs anymore. That still doesn't erase cyber completely because there's still this information space thing. There's still the ability to create communities and then control the information that they're sort of ingesting and sort of shape them. Like there are still domains of interesting things happening, but it's not, of course, the same as the deny, degrade, deceive, destroy, defenestrate. Demonize.
So you're saying that there'd be still a domain of competition that's maybe in our definition we wouldn't call cyber, but is internet and information related.
Mm-hmm.
I'll double down and I'll say that I actually think the US and its allies have an advantage in that space mm-hmm. because of the attractiveness of liberal democratic values.
Absolutely. Well, and if it moves to that, I think what happens is the small players lose capability, right? So if you are Facebook and the only thing that's left is information operations, Facebook becomes a huge player, right? Whereas right now,
right,
they're a huge player in that domain. But if you as an individual want to develop cyber capability, you can because you don't need to compete with Facebook on their terms, right? You could hack Facebook if you wanted to. That would be,
right,
you know. That's what we're talking about getting rid of, is the ability for anyone to just enter the space a way. Could it even be done, right? We're suggesting that it's in the best interest of the U.S. to shut down as much of cyber as possible to limit the ability of anyone to compete with them.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that the U.S. would definitely lose stuff, right? It uses cyber operations to achieve things. I guess probably intelligence collection is the most important thing. But what they'd gain is that their relative strength compared to competitors would be vastly increased because then you're left with kind of conventional tools. So mm-hmm. military, diplomacy, economic heft, financial heft. I think those are all things that the US is head and shoulders above competitors. Whereas right. in cyberspace, it's, you know, it's probably ahead, maybe. But I think the other thing we mentioned before is that those countries that we talked about where their cyber strategy makes sense, many of those avenues the US doesn't do. It doesn't do economic espionage. It doesn't steal cryptocurrency. It doesn't.
There's some people who might argue that one, I think.
Like
not as a revenue generation, right? Yeah.
Oh well, I mean, it seizes it legally. Yes, that's true. It's got a legal process to seize cryptocurrency, but because it either chooses to or doesn't engage in those things, you know, it's cyberspace is a leveler, but it's also playing on a much smaller playing field, I guess. Some analogy there.
Sorry, I'm just imagining a court in North Korea issuing citations against various crypto exchanges. You've been found in violation of North Korea legislation, edict, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we hereby authorize our military to seize all of your assets as compensation. Come on, you know, it's we followed the process. I think the thing is, right, as powerful and great as cyber is, it is more great for people who are not already at the top,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it gives you a lot of ways of gaining prominence or various different advantages that if you're already at the top, you don't need because you have all the advantages already. Like if you just stay where you are and maintain the status quo, you're better off than having this other thing that allows people to compete, even if you compete better in that domain.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So I did have one other point I wanted to bring up.
Yep.
It's the idea that unlike with conventional forces, where you can only sort of compete during wartime, with cyber, you can compete during peacetime, which means that it is constant, right? Yep. It is always a test, that there's always the ability for these smaller players to gain a leg up and to get advantage. And that happens every day of the week.
Yeah.
There's no stop.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think in a way, the sort of conventional military dominance is like squeezing a balloon. And when that space for competition is squeezed because you'll never win,
mm-hmm.
it sort of puffs out into the cyber arena because
mm-hmm.
it's a more contestable domain, maybe.
There we go. That's a good way of putting it. So, you know, we mentioned that the US has this big cyber espionage thing going on, but there was espionage before cyber.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if they got rid of cyber, you know, NSA would still be there doing SIGINT, right? The CIA, they would lose that 100 people working on cyber and get an additional 100 people doing HUMINT, you know, or whatever the numbers are. But espionage would still be a thing that they dominate in simply because they have more and bigger and so on, even in conventional espionage domains. So I think,
right, yep. Yeah. You know, so there is actually no magic wand. So in a practical sense, they couldn't sort of totally destroy it. They would just make it a lot harder. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you think that they would, even in a much harder world, have an edge on
mm-hmm.
most, if not all, of the other countries that we've talked about. And right. so therefore, it still makes sense to try and crush it as a domain of competition.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the edge that they have isn't just industrial might or the biggest military or the most attractive place to live. It's not just the soft power of like Hollywood and, you know, music and stuff like that. It's they still do dominate in other areas, in conventional espionage, in, you know, SIGINT, MASINT, IMAGINT, stuff like that. If espionage comes down to who can put the most and most expensive satellites in orbit and collect the highest quality images from them and process them, it's still going to be the US, right? It's not.
Yeah. I think they've also got a pretty good education system when it comes to the kind of, and also innovation system. I guess mm-hmm. I'm talking about the pipeline from universities to Silicon Valley doing these kind of high tech things, which mm-hmm. I guess I would call cyber operations.
So I think that having this sort of constant level of peacetime competition, that's a thing that can exist in domains that the US is dominant in, you know, the regular soft power areas that we would consider, you know, the movies and music and, you know, a good economy and, you know, good education and things like that, which is very attractive, to having this domain where they do not necessarily have the same level of dominance and in which other people can compete on a level playing field and on which they can lose, right? So if you just look like Colonial Pipeline, you know, that was a huge loss, I think. And by having this domain of competition that can happen all of the time, even if they were the absolute best, you know, if someone has the chance to just keep shooting on goal, it doesn't matter if we've got the best goalie, at some point something's going to go in.
Right, so the way I would talk about that is that you're really in the game of mitigating risk, and cyberspace seems like a bit of a crapshoot at times. So it's hard to know how much risk you're carrying, how vulnerable you really are. Like the optimist in me says that powerful, wealthy countries will do well in the longer term.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hard. Well, I guess the whole insurance industry is an example of how it's hard to how to price that risk and what risk you're actually carrying. And I think it makes sense to argue that we should just eliminate that risk and stick mm-hmm. to domains where we are a lot better at measuring where we're actually at, which I think is the conventional space.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that it's time for the US to quit faffing about and just secure the internet. You know, they've had their fun, and you know, now they just need to flip the switch that they've been holding off on and secure everything.
Yeah, so to me it seems like what's happened is that they've had strategies for using cyber capabilities, military strategies, but they haven't had a national strategy to see how that fits into all the other tools of power that mm-hmm. has been, I guess, far-sighted enough to say that, look, it's a domain where we'll be more challenged than any of the other ones, so why don't we eliminate it?
If I'm hearing you correctly, you're suggesting that the US has not been great at developing and following through on long-term big policy ideas. I am shocked, sir. Yeah.
Shocked.
You know, but I think that's very much it as well, is that, you know, in some sense, you have to stop doing this, like, cyber can be used for signaling. There is deterrence in cyber. Cyber war will look like, you got to stop that, and you got to say, where does cyber fit into our grand strategy?
Yeah.
Right? Out of all the things that we want to do as a nation, what does cyber help us do, and what does it hinder us by giving the opposition a leg up?
Yeah, yeah. I think and looking at it from the term I'd use is competitive advantage.
I wouldn't use that term because I don't use big words. Yeah, they would benefit a lot from not looking at what is cyber and how is it different from everything else, but just how does cyber help us and how does it hurt us and how do we want to maximize our overall competitive advantage as a nation and incorporate cyber into that? You know, and I think what we've been saying is that their best strategy in cyber would be to ensure that everyone is secure.
Yeah.
You know, just to limit that domain for other players.
Yeah. I think what we're saying makes sense, but I don't really know whether that should change US policy. I mean, should they actually spend more money on CISA? Is it more regulation?
I think maybe China recognizes this. They see how cyber gives other people advantages, and they, you know, as we say, they've got this long vision, you know, they're looking 10, 20 years into the future. So I think China understands that they will be better off when they're top dog if cyber doesn't exist, which is why they're burning all of the O-Day now, right? They are killing all of the bugs so that by the time that they get to be top dog, the internet will be secure. And I think they deserve a round of applause for that.
Yeah, that seems like an optimistic place to end. So thanks a lot, Craig.
All right. Good to talk to you.